All right. Well, good morning. I have to say, before we go any further, we've had a few embarrassing incidents recently where the person that came up here to give the message was wearing something disturbingly close to the person that came up and did silence a few minutes before. Today takes it to a whole new level. That guy was wearing like almost the exact thing that I'm wearing. We're going to have to figure out a process to kind of deal with this. My name is Jason again, for those of you that I haven't had a chance to meet. And I just want to let me echo what I said earlier and just welcome everyone that's here this morning. We are so thrilled that you've decided to spend an hour of your Sunday morning here with us. If you're listening on the podcast at a later date, if you're streaming right now live, we want to welcome you as well. We're happy that you're here or there listening to what's going on here this morning. We're in the middle of a series called GPS, and it's been phenomenal. And we're dealing with this idea of direction. And how do we start to be intentional about choosing God as the one that guides our life? We said from the start, whether you realize it or not, we all have someone or something that's providing direction in our life, guiding our steps. How do we be intentional about making sure that it's God that we're choosing to be the GPS that guides our steps? And we started early and we talked about just that, being intentional about isolating God amidst all the other possible voices, isolating his voice and being intentional about that. And then we talked about kind of lowering amidst all these distractions and all of the inputs that just bombard us on a daily basis. We talked about the importance of silencing those, being purposeful about silencing those so that we can raise his voice. And then we looked at the idea that distractions aren't always external. Right? I mean, all of us have this internal voice that can be really distracting because it's constantly pulling and tugging at us and trying to get us to go in different directions. And we talked about how can we start to win the battle over that inner voice. Then last week, we looked at this idea that we can even get distracted as we attempt to follow God. We can even get distracted by things that on the surface, things seem like really good things. Right? They seem like good things, but if we're not careful, if we're not setting aside time to constantly engage God and make sure we're listening for his voice, we can end up getting distracted by good things that aren't necessarily God's things for our life. And one of the kind of principles that we've carried with us throughout this series is that, and it's kind of a myth that we've been trying to bust, this idea, and I think there's a perception sometimes that engaging God, getting better, getting closer to God, hearing his voice is something that is kind of magical or mystical. And sometimes we have this attitude that, you know what, I'm just going to go throughout my life and hopefully I'll be one of the lucky ones that God decides to talk to, that he just busts through the noise and in some magical way, he just talks to me and I'm one of the people that can say, yeah, I hear God. I hear God. And we've tried to counteract that and say, that's not the message you read as you look through the scriptures. What if it's not magical or mystical? What if it's eminently practical? And that we just haven't been intentional enough about putting practical things into our life that will make space and make time for us to engage God and start to hear his voice. And the first step we took was to challenge ourselves to say, can we find just 10 or 15 minutes a day? Just 10 or 15 minutes a day to isolate ourselves and be with God. Hear his voice. Listen for his voice. Engage him in this conversation. I don't know about you guys. I pray that you've been going on this journey with us the last 4 weeks. I've been doing it, and it's just been phenomenal. I've been a follower of Christ for a while, but going through this process and just trying to engage him at a different level and just be more purposeful in the way that I do this has allowed me to start to engage with him and experience him in ways that, frankly, I haven't in years and years. And I so pray and hope that you guys have been tracking with us on this journey and that you've done that you've sought to set aside 10 or 15 minutes and you've started to just get a taste. You've just gotten a glimpse through doing that. And if you're at all like me, this little taste that you've gotten, it's made you hungrier. You've gotten hungrier for more. You've thought, I'm doing this now. I'm being intentional. I set aside 10 minutes in the morning or 15 minutes in the morning, or maybe it's in the evening for you, and I'm listening for God and I'm hearing things that I've never heard before. I'm feeling his presence in ways that I never have before. And so you're hungry for more. I know I am. And so as I've kind of gone through the thought process, the first place that my mind went is if 10 or 15 minutes is good, if 10 or 15 minutes allowed me to hear him and it's given me this taste, just a glimpse of what this relationship with him could look like, well, then 45 minutes or an hour is probably better, right? So let me just expand my time with him. Instead of spending 10 or 15 minutes in the morning, let me expand my time with him in the morning and let me spend an hour with him. That's the first place my mind went. And as I started to do that, and I'll just be transparent with you, the thought of working in an hour at the start of my day was really intimidating. We all live extremely hectic lives, and that's been another theme, the fact that just the lifestyle we live in today's culture and in this part of the country, it's just intense, and it's hectic, and we're all busy. And so as I went through this process, and I don't know if you went through the same process, and I thought expanding from 10 to 15 minutes to an hour at one chunk of time, it was scary. And then you add on the fact that even if you can find an hour in your day, I think we're so conditioned with all of the inputs that come into our life, we have this kind of technologically induced ADD, a lot of us. And how many of you guys recognize this picture? You're sitting at home at night, and you've got the TV on, and a book in your lap, and an iPad to the left of you, and your phone to the right of you, and you're like just going back and forth between all these things. It's unbelievable. Even if you can find time to set aside, so many of us suffer from this just distraction of what's going on. I'm in marketing for a living, and I heard something 2 weeks ago that I found absolutely fascinating, and I thought you guys would appreciate, and it kind of is very relevant to this point. Makers of candy sellers and gum sellers, their sales are suffering right now. And kind of think through this with me, and it'll make complete logical sense. Their sales are suffering right now. One of the reasons is, one of the main channels that they rely on, makers of gum and candy, to sell their product is at the checkout aisle of grocery stores. And you guys all know, you're standing in line at ShopRite, and it's called impulse buying. And they rely on this for a massive, massive part of their annual revenue. And they count on you to be standing there, and you're looking at magazines on your left, and you're looking at, you know, Wrigley's gum and candy bars and candy, and you grab a piece of candy. Their sales are suffering. You know why? People can't stand for 45 seconds in line at the grocery store without pulling their phone out and checking to see if they've gotten any new text messages, any new emails. Are there any Facebook updates? They're not looking to buy magazines and candy because we can't even sit still for 45 seconds while we're waiting to buy our groceries at ShopRite without getting distracted. We have so many inputs that are just coming in. Even if you can make time, can you do it effectively and really focus? I'll be honest with you, I don't have that problem. I guess I'm lucky in that sense. I think I'm kind of an old soul at heart, and I actually enjoy completely turning off the iPad and putting the phone away. And I love sitting down and just focusing on something, reading or whatever. My problem is kind of the exact opposite. If I slow down, when I can find time to slow down from my hectic schedule and sit down and try to sit still for more than 15 minutes, I fall asleep. No, really, I fall asleep. I'm like a 75-year-old man. As I thought through this, I thought, is this a new thing? Like, if that, but it's not. As I really thought through, I've been this way my whole life. I've been this way my whole life. I haven't been able to kind of focus on anything. And this is actually... That's actually me, circa like 1977. That's Christmas morning at my grandparents' house. What you can't see in that picture, because it's outside the frame, there are like 18 or 20 people buzzing around that living room right now. We've already opened presents, right? And I grew up in the South, and so this is going to sound conservative. I don't mean it to be chauvinistic, but the women are in the kitchen fixing lunch. The men are like getting ready for whatever football game's on TV. There's just hustle and bustle going on, and I decided that my time was done, and I was going to slow down, and it didn't matter that I'm in this awkward position draped across an ottoman. Out! I'm out! I'm still like that to this day. I mean, you ask my wife. We went to a movie it was a month ago, and I tried to remember what the movie was. And we walk out, and she says, "What did you think?" And I said, "It was okay." And she said, "Well, what did you think about this?" And I said, "I was sleeping during that part. I don't admit." And that's serious. It was an action movie, and I slept during the last kind of crucial part of the end. That's kind of my problem. So whether or not you've got this kind of technology-induced ADD, or whether you're like borderline narcoleptic like I am, there are challenges. There are challenges when we try to isolate and spend time with God. I don't think it's a problem of will, though. I believe this about you guys. I've been talking to you as we've gone through this series. I think we want so desperately I think we want so desperately to engage God. So I don't think it's a problem of will. It's not that we don't want to. It's that there are all these challenges that come in. I don't think it's hopeless, though. I think there are things that we can do. There are things that we can do that can allow us to start to engage God, not just here on Sunday mornings, not just 10 minutes a day in the morning, but to start to just engage him constantly. There's a passage that's found in 1 Thessalonians. It's in chapter 5, verse 17. It's an extremely short passage, and it's the Apostle Paul writing to these group of Christians in the town called Thessalonica, and he's right at the end of this chapter, and he's just giving them a kind of a list of really practical things that he wants them to do to just better choose life and make good decisions and get closer to God. And this is one of the things he says: never stop praying. Never stop praying. In another translation, if you might read, it says, pray without ceasing. Now, you may be thinking right now, that doesn't help me, because what that sounds like it's doing is absolutely raising the bar. You know, a lot of times we'll talk about a challenge or an issue, and then we'll say, let's go look in God's Word and see what he has to say. And we go to God's Word, and it's an area where he's presenting kind of a solution or something, and this doesn't sound like it, does it? You said, hey, man, we're trying to go from 10 to 15 minutes to expanding his time. And then you just took me to a verse where it says, not only do I need to try to go from 10 to 15 minutes to 45 or an hour, I've got to pray without ceasing. Whew. How do I even begin to do that? We're going to work through it. We're going to work through that, because it's not magical. It's practical. And if we just continue to build on what we're building on, we're going to get to a point where we're engaging God constantly. And so I want to talk about two things this morning that I think will do just that. Will put us in a position to just engage God on an ongoing basis in such an effective way. And the first one is really a mindset shift. And I think it's important to kind of establish that. And then the second one is just some really practical things that I think will help us engage God. So number one is, and I said, it's a mindset shift. It's a paradigm shift, but I think it's so key. And here it is. It's this. We have to stop thinking of God as stationary. God is not stationary. We have to stop thinking of him as stationary. There's a mindset or an idea that's pervasive in society, and you may even have it as you sit here this morning, or maybe you grew up with this mindset, and it's this. It's this idea that God lives in church, right? That God lives here in a church space inside of a worship service. And this is not a new idea. This goes back throughout history. You've seen cultures build temples and structures to house their deities. So this is an idea that comes to us throughout history. And unfortunately, it's made it into modern times. And really unfortunately, I think this mindset sometimes even creeps into the modern church. And so we have this idea that I go to a service on a Sunday morning, and it's amazing, and I engage with God. And then I walk out of here and I have 167 hours left in the week, and that's the time that I devote to work and family and hobbies and all the other things that I do. And that's one of the dangers of services. Now, I have to say this because I don't want to send the wrong message. What we do here on Sunday mornings is so, so crucial. To be able to come together as a family, to be able to worship God together, to be able to encourage and build each other up is so important. And you see this in the scriptures that followers of Christ are called to come together like this. So I don't want to send the wrong message. But I think if we're not careful, we can allow this mindset to seep in that I come here and this is where God lives, and that God is more present here than he is out there. If we're not careful, we can have the mindset that God lives here more than he lives at work when you go there tomorrow morning. We can have the mindset that God lives here more than he lives with you at school, that he's here more than he's with you when you're at dinner in New York on a Friday night, or when you're in the park on a Saturday, that he's here more than he's there. And I think if we're going to live into this calling, this mission to have a real relationship with God, to engage him not just in incremental units of space and time throughout the week, but to engage him constantly, we have to overcome this mindset, and we have to realize that your time spent with God yesterday, it was the time from when you woke up to the time when you went to sleep. And actually, that's not even true. Your time spent with God yesterday was from midnight to midnight. And maybe you were only aware of the time period from the time you woke up till the time you went to bed. But he's with you always. Yes, he's here this morning, but he's with you always, wherever you go. There's a passage is recorded in Psalm. It's the 139th Psalm, and it's written by David, and it captures this idea beautifully, and I want to read it together with you. Psalm 139, starting in verse 7, says, I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. If I go up to heaven, you're there. If I go down to the grave, you're there. If I ride the wings of the morning, if I dwell by the farthest oceans, even there, your hand will guide me and your strength will support me. I could ask the darkness to hide me and the light around me to become night, but even in darkness, I cannot hide from you. Now, if you're not familiar with the Psalms, and if you're not familiar with the person that was writing this, it may sound to you like that passage has kind of a negative tinge to it, like there's kind of a Big Brother thing going on there, or like God's the NSA, and he's reading like everything. I can't escape from you. If you know David, the man that wrote this passage, and if you know the relationship we have with God, that he had with God, then you'll know that that couldn't be further from the truth. And actually, if you read the rest of this chapter 139 and you put what we just read, if you put it in context, you quickly see that David found the entirety of his strength, the entirety of his comfort from the fact that his God was with him always. And I think if we're going to move down this path, if we're going to experience God in new and powerful ways, we have to move from the mindset that God exists in space and time, in confined places, to a mindset like David had. That God is with us always. That God is with us always. And I don't think this is an issue we have intellectually. I think if I were to ask each of you, do you believe that God only lives here in this space? Or do you believe that he's with you everywhere you go? I think intellectually, most of you guys would probably go, well, no, God's with me. So I don't think it's an idea of knowing it. I think it's simply an idea of we need to be reminded of it. It's so easy to come into a space like this and just feel like God is here, and then we go out and we just forget. And so what I think is so important, and this is where I want to start getting a little bit practical, what I think is so important is, can we just put reminders around us as we go throughout the week, put reminders around us that will help us remember that God is everywhere. Everywhere. And I just put up a few things on the screen, and feel free, you've got notes cards and pens. If you want to write these down, write them down. If you want to kind of come up with ideas on your own, this is just a sample, but just think about the things that you can do that are really practical as you go throughout your week that can remind you. If you work in an office or have a cube, I'm sure you have, if it's like me, there's sticky notes everywhere. Hey, call this guy. Don't forget you got lunch with this guy tomorrow. It's everywhere. What if you just put up something that said, God is here? And I'm not talking about like big cheesy, like motivational posters and stuff. That it could just be something that only you can see, but something that you see every day when you go. We live and die by calendars and Outlook and whatever program you use. Just what if you just programmed a daily recurring reminder? God is here. God is real. God is with me. You can mark it private, and you can mark your time free so your boss doesn't wonder why you have an hour meeting every morning for consistently. Just little reminders that you can do. We all have task lists. Put it on there. Hey, remember God's with you today. I love this next one. We all have iPhones and smartphones and tablets, and most of them have passwords. And I know most of us use really sophisticated passwords like 1111111111. What if you just made your password to get into your iPhone, God with me? Or just God. So that 40 times a day, you're just being reminded, God is with me. God is with me. Whatever it is, and I said this is just a sample, whatever it is, just something to remind you as you go throughout your week that God doesn't live only in this space. He's with us. And as we begin to make that shift in the paradigm, as we begin to make that shift in our mindset, it becomes easier then to realize that we can engage God not just in times that we set aside, not just here when we have silence, which is a phenomenal time, but we can engage God not just there, not just in the 10 to 15 minute devotional that we've set up, but everywhere, because we're reminded that God is with us. So as we start to make that shift, though, I think the reality is there are still some things that we can do to help kind of build patterns of behavior into the week. So I don't think it's enough just to commit your mind to it and to kind of start to know and to feel that God's with us. I think it helps to start to build patterns of behavior, to start to build habits into our week that will help us live into this, that will help us engage God in more powerful ways. If you've ever made a resolution to get healthier, and probably I won't even ask you to raise your hand because everybody would probably raise your hand. If you've ever made a resolution, whether it was done at the beginning of January or some other time in the year, you completely understand this idea. You've said, I'm going to get healthy. And it probably involves some combination of a more active lifestyle and eating healthier. And so you understand that the first step that you take is kind of this mental preparedness, this mental commitment, so that you mentally say, I'm committed to this. This is not just something I'm doing because my wife is nagging me or whatever. This is something I'm doing because I'm committed to this and I want to do this. And maybe you even join a gym, you buy some new running shoes, you buy a bike. I mean, you're committed. But you know, if you've ever done this, the reality is, as you start to go through the month of January, if you're not careful about building in habits, starting to build patterns of behavior, that initial enthusiasm, that adrenaline that you're running on from your mental commitment will only get you so far. And if you're not building in these structures, building in habits that force you to go to the gym 4 times a week or 5 times a week or whatever it is you've set as your goal, you're in danger of missing it and fall off. And so the second thing I want us to talk about is this idea of building in rituals. So yes, one, changing our mindset and starting to realize God is not just here, he's everywhere. But then two, starting to realize that I can be much more effective in engaging him and living into this idea of engaging him constantly if I build rituals into my day. I want to take us to a story. It's about a man named Daniel. And Daniel is an Israelite, and we read about his story in a book that carries his name, the book of Daniel in the Old Testament. And before we go to the story that I want us to read, I just want to give you a little bit of context and background on Daniel. I mentioned Daniel was a member of the nation of Israel. He was actually a member of the royal family of the nation of Israel. And he lived at a time when the nation of Israel was sieged and took captive by another empire, the Babylonian Empire. So the nation of Israel was sieged and a lot of exiles were taken off to live in the area of the Babylonian Empire. And Daniel was one of those that was taken off. And not only was he taken captive, Daniel and several other men were taken into service of the king. And Daniel eventually ended up working for this government that had just ransacked his nation and took him and his family captive. Imagine the situation that Daniel is facing now. But he remained faithful to God, and he performed his duties in the service of this new king so well that he actually worked his way up, and he ended up becoming the chief advisor to this king. And the story we're going to read about happens actually later down the road when there's another king over this empire, and this king's name is Darius. And Daniel has continued to be faithful to God, and he's continued to serve in his new role faithfully, so much so that he's worked himself up again, and he's one of three, essentially, governors in this nation at this time. So he's got a massive job in this empire that has taken the nation of Israel captive. And he's actually done so well that all the other governors and court officials around are jealous of him, and they start to plot to try to tear him down and take him down. And that's where we pick up this story, and we're going to read. It's found in Daniel, the 6th chapter, starting in verse 4. It says, "Then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs, but they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. So they concluded, our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion." So if you thought that political intrigue and backstabbing was something that's new in our society today, this goes back years. These people were jealous of Daniel and his position, and they started plotting, and they played the religion card. The only way we're going to get this guy is to attack the rules of his religion and just tear him down that way. We continue reading. It says, "So the administrators and high officers went to the king and said, 'Long live King Darius. We are all in agreement, we administrators, officials, high officers, advisors, and governors, that the king should make a law that will be strictly enforced. Give orders that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. And now, your majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed, an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked. So King Darius signed the law. But when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home and knelt down as usual in his upstairs room with its windows open toward Jerusalem. He prayed three times a day, just as he has always done, giving thanks to his God. Kind of puts our struggles in perspective, huh? We're talking about trying to find additional time to engage with God in light of our iPhone distractions and our busy commutes. And here Daniel is faced with a situation where he's working for a government that issues a mandate that says praying to God is illegal. And what do we see him do? He immediately, the text says, goes to his upstairs room as usual and prays three times a day, just as he had always done. I think one of the reasons that Daniel was able to be so resolute in the face of this dilemma was that he had built in rituals. He had built time and structures into his day that allowed him to engage God. And I think it's not accidental that the text emphasizes this point in that last paragraph I read. It's not accidental. The text could have just said, and Daniel went upstairs and prayed to God, God, help me. But the text says, he went upstairs as usual and prayed just as he had always done. You see, he had built rituals and habits into his life so much they had just become a part of who he was. And so when he was faced then with, I can't even call it a distraction, when he was faced with this just possibly faith-crushing situation, it wasn't even a question what he was going to do. So I think if we're going to engage God, if we're going to be successful in doing this, in listening to his voice, not just here, not just 10 minutes a morning, we're going to have to do what Daniel did, and we're going to have to get practical about building in rituals. Now, I said earlier that as I thought about this for me, the thought of finding an hour was daunting. And I would imagine you guys are the same way. And so as we talked through this at the speaking team, we all had the same thought. And so we said, what if instead of emphasizing that, wouldn't it be better just to break that time up and spread it out through the day? That's what you see Daniel doing, right? And so let me encourage you as you go into this week, think about this. Think about finding three 15-minute periods throughout your day. Instead of having kind of the daunting bridge too far goal of spending an hour every morning with God, find 15 minutes three or four times a day to spend with God. And I want to, again, we said that this is practical. It's not magical, it's practical. So I want to put some ideas up here. Think about things that you do multiple times a day that you can kind of connect this ritual to. Most of us commute to work, right? Most of us have commutes to go to work. Whether or not it's on a subway or the path or in a car, you commute. If you have a dog, you do that at least twice a day, I would think. There are things that you can do. Are there other things that you do? Do you take, you know, every 2 hours you check your beeper? You take a break to check MySpace? You know, you stop to check your Palm Pilot and see what's going on? When I mentioned this at the speaking team meeting, they all started laughing, and I was like, guys, these people are technically savvy. We got to talk about stuff like this. We gotta reach these people. And so whatever it is that you can build in your day to connect to prayer, it will help you remember that God's there, and it builds in these rituals that allow you to speak to God. And I think something else it does is, again, you may have thought when I said, hey, instead of finding an hour, see if you can find three 15-minute time periods, maybe you thought, That's one more thing I have to find time for. And I think the beauty of this is there are things you already do that are ritualistic. There are things you do that are habitual that you can just attach prayer to. For me, my three times as I've worked through this, and it's become phenomenal because it achieved exactly what I wanted to. I didn't have to find extra times because these are things I've already done. My three things are morning commute, lunch, evening commute. I drive to work, and so I spend 45 minutes to an hour in the car in the morning. I take a lunch break almost every day. There are days where that are just hectic and you have a hard time finding time, but almost every day I take a lunch break, and I drive 45 minutes to an hour home in the evening. That's three times where I'm not having to create new space. I'm not having to create more time in my calendar. That's, most of us would have a hard time doing that. I'm finding things that I'm already doing, but I'm just shifting how I think about those things, and I'm attaching God to them and attaching this idea that I can talk to God anywhere. Because remember, he's not stationary. God's not just here. God's with me in the car when I'm going. God's with me at work. God's with you when you're walking your dog. He's with you. Let's get practical about finding times, building in rituals, building up habits to engage God. Now, I want to say something here because I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. The minute we start talking about rituals and habits, I want to make sure that you understand clearly that the value in a ritual and a habit is not just in building rituals and habits. Because the minute we start to do that, the minute we treat rituals and habits like expectations, that becomes dangerously close to legalism. And then it completely misses the point. So I'm not suggesting that you set up habits and rituals that are then one more set of expectations that you have to meet every day. And if you don't do it, you're racked with guilt because you missed this expectation. That completely, completely misses the point. But I think the reality is that there's a process of behavior change that happens in us. And you see it time and time again. The things we think about are the things we end up doing. Thoughts become actions. And then actions that we repeat over and over become habits. And then habits, eventually, if you stick with them long enough, habits become character. And it seeps in, and it actually starts to become just a part of who you are. And so the purpose of building a habit or a ritual is not to say, I've got habits and rituals, but it rather is to live into this idea that these habits and rituals simply put you in position to talk to God. And it's through that that you will be completely transformed. Completely transformed, and eventually will just become part of your character. And if you think back to the gym analogy, if any of you have ever made it past like month one or two, you know this well. If you can get past that point where it's painful to meet that three time a week reminder to go to the gym. If you can get past that, you know, if you've ever made it to that zone, you know that you eventually get to a point that it's become so much a part of who you are that actually the reverse is true. Missing a time to go to the gym becomes painful because it's just who you are. It's just what you do. Building these spiritual habits works the exact same way. So it starts off as a ritual that you do. And just like Daniel, the text doesn't tell us this, but I have to think that when Daniel got this word that the king had essentially outlawed prayer to any god or any person other than him, the king, I have to think that what wasn't going through Daniel's mind was, oh man, what am I going to do? Because I've committed to pray three times a day, and if I don't hit that prayer goal, then I'm going to mess up and I'm going to not meet someone's expectations. Daniel didn't have habits and rituals for the sake of habits and rituals. Daniel had built rituals, and that had become a part of who he was. So when he heard that King Darius mandated that no god was to be prayed to, it wasn't even a question what Daniel was going to do. He prayed three times a day because that's just who he was. That's what he had always done. When we get to this point, when you start to shift the mindset and realize God's not stationary, he's not confined by time and by space, that we take him everywhere. And then when you start to build these rituals in to give you structures that will allow you to engage him and connect him with things that you're already doing, a few things happen. It's so much easier then, when you get to this point, to remember that God is everywhere, to remember that he's with you always. It also becomes so much easier to engage him in conversation. Because as I said, you've essentially freed him up from this prison that you might have put him in by saying he only exists here. He's with you everywhere. And so not only do you more easily remember that he's with you, you have an easier time praying to him. I think as we go through our life, if you're anything like me, almost all of us have an ongoing talk track that we carry with us all of our waking hours. You're just going through life and you're constantly just talking to yourself. Now, maybe you do it out loud, and that's okay, I guess, if you do that. But whether it's out loud or in your head, all of us are constantly, you've got thoughts going through your head. Imagine if we get to the point where you so understand that God is with you always. And you've so built these habits and rituals in that spending time with him throughout the day isn't something that you do because it's in your Outlook reminder. It's something you do just because that's who you are. Imagine when you get to that place, that internal dialogue completely switches. And you stop talking to yourself, you start talking to him. You stop talking to yourself, and you start talking on an ongoing basis to the God of the universe. And then all of a sudden, Paul's exhortation that we read about in Thessalonians doesn't sound so far-fetched. It doesn't sound like a bridge too far, because you begin to see how that's possible. That you can pray without ceasing. You can never stop praying because you're carrying him with you, and it's just a dialogue. It's just part of who you are, and it's awesome. It's awesome. There are those of you here this morning that are all along the spectrum of this journey with God, and there are likely those that are here, and you may still be even trying to figure out this whole God thing, and you're not even sure if you believe in God. Maybe you're here because a friend invited you this morning. And let me just say to you, we are so thrilled that you're here with us this morning. Just thrilled that you're here spending time with us, meeting God here. And I hope you come back and just continue to come just 1 hour a week and just meet God here with us. There are others of you here this morning that you've decided to follow Christ, but maybe you're just now starting to think about how to engage him more. And you want it so bad and you want to engage him, but maybe you're 3 weeks ago on our timeline. And so I would encourage you as you go this week, if you're there, go back and recommit yourself to just finding 10 or 15 minutes a day to engage God, spend with him, isolate yourself, lower the noise, and let his be the voice that you listen to. But then I know there are those of you that are here this morning that, just like a muscle in the gym analogy, needs to be worked, and it's ready to get built, and it's at a point that it's ready to go to a whole nother level. There are those of you here this morning that you've gotten a taste, and you've done this, and you've begun to experience God in small ways throughout the week. Maybe you've built in 10 minutes each morning to spend with God, and you've gotten just a taste of what that can be like. Let me encourage you as you go into this week. Start to think about things you can do, things you can build into your day that will build in this idea and just make you know that God is with you, not just here, not just in the times that you set aside and call quiet times, but he's with you always. Set aside those times, and your experience with God will just explode. I know it because I've seen it in my own life, and it's amazing. It's not magical. It's not mystical. It can be practical, and it can be absolutely beautiful. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you so much. Thank you so much for this time that we've had here this morning. Just time to sing to you, time to meditate on your words, time to talk to you. I thank you for every single person that's here. And I thank you for your unconditional love. And I thank you just for being who you are. I thank you for being a God that pursues us even when we're running 100 miles an hour away from you. Thank you for pursuing. Thank you for loving. Because we know all we have to do is stop when we're running. All we have to do is stop and turn, and you're right there because you've been pursuing us all along. Thank you that you don't judge us or accept us or decide who you're going to pursue based on what we do. Because if that were the case, none of us is worthy to be pursued. Thank you for just loving us and pursuing us for who we are. And as we go out of here today, Father, just make it real for us. Make it real in the minds and the hearts and the souls of each and every person here, that when they walk out these doors in a few minutes, make it real that you don't get checked at the door. That you walk out those doors with us. You're with us the rest of today. You're with us while we sleep tonight. And you're with us as we get up and go out into the week that lies ahead of us. And we want so badly to experience you. Help us. Help us be strong. Help us be diligent in just setting aside times to hear your voice. We want so bad for yours to be the voice that guides us. We want to just lower all of these other inputs and distractions. We don't want to hear them. We want to hear you. Just speak to us, Father. Speak to us. In Jesus' name, amen.